for coming.
Hey, listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of Taking It Down. We are brought to you by the Alabama Take website. We're back once again, and we're going to talk about what we've been thinking about two things, mainly. The Christopher Nolan film Tenet, which is now streaming on HBO Max. And we'll also briefly talk about the third episode of the Disney Plus show, Loki. In case you don't know, joining me per usual is Mr. Adam Morrow and Mr. Donovan Reinwald.
As per usual.
Yeah, per usual. The reason why I'm not really giving you a proper hello here.
The reason I'm not really excited.
No, I'm totally excited. I really am. The thing that I'm going to do is I'm about to clear the lane for you two to go one-on-one, but I need to set it up. For anyone who didn't listen last week, Adam has set Donovan on a mission of listening to The Grateful Dead and reporting back, which is par for the course for Adam. There was this running joke in a text thread with another friend where Adam just kept talking to him as if he listened to The Grateful Dead constantly. I mean, it just kept on and on and on. And at some point, that joke turned into reality where the guy started responding and saying, "Hey, I actually did listen to blah, 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 blah." I'm going to turn it over to Adam and Donovan because I think that Donovan has news on that front, and I bet you Adam has questions on that front. So Donovan has completed one of the first course of his mission.
My first question has to do with his shirt. Listeners, you can't see this shirt, but wearing this on a Sunday morning leads me to believe that you have enjoyed your week, your first week in the Grateful Dead universe.
Absolutely not.
Oh.
So I listened to two or three times through Europe 72, and then American Beauty, mm-hmm. and Working Man's Dead.
Okay.
Oh, those are great.
That I've had a representative sample of the dead.
Well, one era of the dead.
From one era of the dead, yeah. But an era that people, like, there were things on here that I'm like, okay, like, I see this on bumper stickers, and, you know, I've heard Friend of the Devil before, which is a fun little song.
Fun little song.
Why is Truckin'?
Why is it?
Why is it?
I don't know. I can't really defend that one.
And then just keep on going, Truckin', keep on truckin'. And it's like, I can see every car at a farmer's market I want to set a light is driving through my head as they go on truckin'.
It's got the great line in it, though, about vitamin C and speed and living off. What's the line?
I mean, it's, what is the actual
living off vitamin C and cocaine or something like that?
Something like that.
That's fantastic.
And but then he's like, what a long, strange trip it's been. I don't think it's actually been that strange for most people who put this on their car. I think it's been like some odd things have happened, but probably not that crazy.
Just the normal course
of life.
Or
you're addressing two things here. You're addressing audience versus artist.
Well, I mean, I guess Jerry Garcia went into a diabetic coma, so that's pretty wild.
They earned the right.
Did he not come out of that coma unable to play guitar and had to relearn it all over again?
Did he really?
Probably.
I mean, some of those people, that would have been the mid-80s, right? And people adore, like, the 87 to early 90s run. Like, that's some of the best playing. Some of the worst tones, but some of the best playing.
So, weirdly enough, listening to, like, I think this was a controversial thing. Listening to Europe 72, I was kind of like, oh, I get why there's a Dylan in the Dead, because this sort of sounds like the band could be like your gateway drug to the Dead. Like, there's a lot of the kind of the harmony.
Yep.
A lot of that kind of like, we're folksy, we're hanging out, and, you know, we're just doing stuff.
The
regular folksy stuff.
The turn from, here's what I think will help you with the Dead, is they made a turn. You may like the 60s stuff. I love the 60s stuff when they're like a weird,
all right,
experimental kind of fuzzy garage rock band, for lack of a better term. But they spend all this time in the studio, and then they decide, we'll make Working Man's Dead and American Beauty and kind of focus on those kind of songs, and started exploring, like, you were kind of making fun of it with Truckin', but like this weird America idea, you know?
Truckin'.
Here's what's fascinating about them. They,
yes, all right,
Garcia, they're basically a bluegrass band that went electric, in a lot of ways. Yes. They borrow from the American Songbook in a way that a lot of bands at the time did.
Totally. I see that.
I was having a conversation this week with a fellow musician talking about people don't cover songs quite as much. We were talking about Skull and Roses and how many cover songs there are on that. There's a great new remaster of that record. But just that these days that doesn't exist quite as much. And maybe it's their proximity to living in a American musical landscape where like songs were different than artists in a more profound way. You know what I mean? Like everybody plays these standards and kind of has their own spin on it. And to me, what you're hearing with the folksy, the band thing in Europe 72 is them playing with that idea, playing with like the old weird America, the America of, I mean, you laughed about it earlier, but like truck stops and the road and like a Kerouac kind of vision that to me is, it's more authentic than Kerouac, I think, because they really did it for their entire adult lives.
It feels like a lot of the music is written by someone who's like, I'm obsessed with hobos. Hobo life.
Yeah.
Hobo living. Hobo signs. Hobo marks.
Well, it's a bit of a refutation of certainly what they grew up with in the 50s of like a post-war kind of thing. And then look at when they explode again. I mean, you can think Touch of Grey or not, but like Reagan's America is there when they start playing stadiums. So I think providing like some sort of alternative to boring American life and like proving that this is still a very interesting country. There's still adventure out there. That's what they sound like to me.
So I was listening to these mostly in the car because I figured that was a good way to listen to them.
Sure.
I've got to do a lot of driving on kind of more back roads, which I think is more fun than interstate. They seem more suited to like driving by a sign that's like, there's the Thankful Thomas House, than the I-86 exit or whatever.
Right.
But I'd be listening to it and forget that I was listening to it. Like some of these songs just hit background noise for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which wasn't good.
That wasn't good.
That didn't bode well. No, I don't think it was. I just kind of like I started to tune it out.
Are you talking about the live stuff or the?
The live stuff, yeah. Definitely.
What's interesting too about Europe 72 is they collected those across a whole tour, right? It's obviously not a show, and
yes.
You're also in an era when now I think if you put a live record out, maybe they retouch the vocals a little bit, but otherwise, because everything's on YouTube, you'd get grilled if you did too much work on it, right? If you retouched the picture too much, so to speak. I mean, they redid vocals on that. They added, it's like piano and organ parts on Skull and Roses. All those live records were not approached the same way, which is kind of ironic for a band known for the live show.
Yeah, I mean, on Wikipedia, we've got also Internet Archive. Section on Grateful Dead, right?
Yeah.
Like the live single-handedly powering the Internet Archive.
So, Donovan, I do want to ask, did you not find American Beauty to be a really great album, though? Really? That's
maybe I got to listen to it more.
No,
I'm not giving it a fair shake. Maybe, you know, got to have the right mindset. But, yeah, it was fine.
I thought, well, even back in my younger days when I only tolerated the Dead while some of my friends listened to them. I do like them a lot more now, but back then I still loved American Beauty from start to finish. And I would play, I had a CD copy of it and would play it often.
Sure.
So yeah, I find that interesting that even American Beauty. So if American Beauty doesn't hit for you, I feel like maybe just you don't like the Dead, and there are plenty of people that don't like the Dead.
It's fine.
Maybe it was that, like, American Beauty, like, I did like Box of Rain. Friend of the Devil.
Yes.
But then, you know, you're listening through, and Truckin' just comes hits right at the end.
Truckin's bad.
I think your hang-up is on Truckin', and not so much the Dead.
Nobody listens to Truckin' when they listen to American Beauty.
Yeah. Nobody.
Problem is I can't remember any of the other songs except Friend of the Devil. And then Truckin's just stuck in my head.
You don't
head.
Remember Ripple, Broke Down Palace?
Nope.
I mean, Ripple is like...
I told you, it's...
Ripple is
an
anthem.
Go listen to that album again.
I'm clearly going to have to listen to this a couple more times to really give it its fair shake.
You know what's funny about how much I hate Truckin' is how much I never listen to Casey Jones on purpose, but whenever it comes on, I'm like, this is a jam. I feel like it's the
it's a straight jam.
It's the single of the, you know, of the Working Man's Dead collection. And like when they drop into that live, you're like, oh, this is why they were so big. Like when it's a concise riff play like that, you're like, oh my god, this is the best band I've ever heard in a live setting. Just keep listening, Donovan.
Maybe I will. I felt like the whole time I was listening to this, I was like the Grateful Dead fan and Parrothead Venn diagram is not a complete circle, but we're also like there's something going on there.
It's not a complete circle.
It's not, but let me tell you. The more that I think about the life that Jimmy Buffett has carved out for himself, the more impressed I am. That dude, think about it. There's no pretension.
He does whatever he wants.
He just walks on stage in flip-flops and sings, and it's great. And he's got a...
I'm not here to mock Jimmy Buffett.
I mean, Come Monday. That's a great song.
None of us came here today to mock Jimmy Buffett.
The gentleman has pockets, just pockets full of fucks, and he's not doling out any of them.
Nah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
He's fine.
Good but kudos to him.
You know, I just felt like the parrot head dead head relationship probably has been studied, but I felt like, oh, if I was going to, start my anthropological PhD program, like that might be two subgroups worth taking a peek at.
I think you've made a weird connection here. You've had a weird impression of the dead. That's not the vibe.
I don't know. I just kept getting a. I don't know. Maybe I just have a weird impression.
There are three things happening here.
Tell me that parrot heads are not part of Weird America. I defy you.
No, I don't disagree. The three things are happening here. You've got a hang up on trucking, which we discussed, and you are thinking of this 1980s, 90s, and aughts middle age man audience. And then there's the Grateful Dead, which is I think they're just the three of them are getting tangled.
Too intertwined.
Yeah,
I mean it is tough.
I mean they're doing that, you know, they're doing that almost country. They're doing a country bluegrass
love it
thing, right? And I think the other something else that makes it hard to listen to them is they've just been copied to death.
Yeah.
Like that template, yeah. you know. So sometimes when I've heard a million. Not quite as good copies of this, it can make it hard to hear the original one clearly.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's understandable.
Have you watched the documentary, Donovan?
Mm-mm.
The doc series?
I have not.
It's excellent, as even if you're not into the band, it's still really good. I would recommend that.
All right. That's our dividing line then. Our big segment this week is about the Christopher Nolan movie Tenet, which had the unfortunate weight of being the canary in the coal mine for COVID-19 in the year that was. Last summer, it stuttered its rollout numerous times. Otherwise, I believe that this was a movie on my radar to see in the theater. Like, I had plans to see it, didn't know anything about it, even up until watching it last night. Was it the same for you guys? You were like, oh yeah, gonna go see Tenet, and then COVID happened?
I wish I'd seen this in a theater.
I definitely...
Same thing.
I agree with Donovan on that. And, you know, Christopher Nolan is one of the guys that I think, oh, he put something out. I'll probably go see that in the theater because it has been consistently such an enjoyable experience.
Anyway, as far as the movie itself, the worry I had coming to it, even in my home watching it last night, and the seeming reason that I've put off watching it, was that the news that the actors reported that after reading the script, even they didn't know what was happening? That doesn't bode well for me. Is this movie inching Christopher Nolan into M. Night Shyamalan territory?
Absolutely, yes.
I think he directs a set piece better than all M. Night.
But I mean, he's starting to become the director whose everything hangs on a certain conceit or... you have to wait until the end to see what kind of trick he pulls, kind of thing.
Yes.
I didn't feel like this one was so much like, whoa, there's the twist.
I thought
Shyamalan.
How convoluted this was and how many times they had to explain everything. And I mean, we can get into all this in detail if we want, but I was a thumbs down on this film for the exact reason that you're bringing up here.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Okay.
Well, let's get into it. We'll draw even the spoiler line here. But I tell you what, before we spoil anything, I guarantee you our buddy Jeff would love this movie.
Why do you think that?
Jeff, if you're listening, he loves a good twisty-turny, gotta-kind-of-figure-it-out kind of movie. I won't say anything more because if he listens to this and he hasn't watched, he'll want to stop here and go watch it and then come back.
I love a twisty-turny movie. I love going to Reddit to have things, you know, theories and all that kind of stuff thrown at me. This one did not warrant that to me.
Why?
It just wasn't good. I thought it was bad.
Hmm.
Anyway, we can get into that. You bringing that up?
Yeah,
about
well,
him,
we're about. Let's do it.
I enjoy that genre. It's not that I dislike, but it's got to have the story.
The puzzle box kind of movie.
I'm into it. Yeah,
I think that there are. Isn't it Christopher Nolan's brother, Jonathan Nolan, who does Westworld? And I despise that show. I despise it with all my being because it wants to be cutesy and.
It's a puzzle box with a fart at the center.
That's what...
Exactly. Okay, that's it.
I thought prestige television... Yeah, I hate Westworld, too. Maybe it's gotten better since the early episodes, but that's when, like, that...
It hasn't.
You know, there was such a hot streak of prestige television going when that came out, mm-hmm. and that is when it jumped the shark to me. It's like, this has become self-aware. They're writing for the message boards, in a way.
Absolutely.
That was it right there. For anyone who's seen Tenet, made it past the first hour, my wife didn't. This will sound funny. I thought the back half of the movie was quite great. I thought the first hour and 15 minutes was a bore. I almost gave up on it.
I'm going to come out of here in left field. I was a little worried about this one because the reviews had not been great, said it's too talky. I actually felt pretty moved along in this movie. I felt like it was pretty, you know, it zipped me along. I felt pretty propulsive. I didn't feel like a lot of people said he's trying to explain the plot too much. I didn't super duper feel that. It almost felt like, and I kind of like, I'm not going to spend 1 ounce of energy trying to put it together. I'm not going to spend 1 ounce of anything, trying to figure out what was really going on. I just want to experience it.
Yeah, me too.
And I felt like as a really weird experience, it was kind of cool. I kind of liked I liked it a little bit, the feel of this sort of like the Gnosticism of it, like the mystery, the that you're like fighting a war with the future, but you just know nothing.
Right. Well, when that part was revealed, and that's in the second half of the movie, that's when it becomes interesting. This is the weird thing that I'll say.
Yeah, they were from about the beginning when they get the inverted bullets. They're fighting the future.
Yeah, but that's not quite clear that they are literally fighting people from, you know,
sure.
the future. Right. So do you know when the inversion in the movie happens? It's when John David Washington, he's just the protagonist. When the protagonist is he's on the gurney and he's looking into the room next to him with the Kenneth Branagh's satyr character
yes.
is talking to him, and then it's in reverse, but you can hear the regular version. So
yes.
that's when the movie becomes inverted, and that point going forward, that point till the end of the movie is when I was pretty enthralled. But
Same.
Everything leading up to that, the pacing was great. It had some great Christopher Nolan action pieces, but I was pretty bored. I did find it talky for I nearly bailed on it.
I thought there were a lot of really good set pieces. I watched this last night.
As did I.
And my memory of it is just like really enjoying going from set pieces to set pieces. Really enjoying. I'm not gonna argue and say this was like the best movie he's ever made. In fact, I think it would have worked better for me if he'd kept it more murky and mysterious. I don't need things cleared up. But
go on, Adam. You wanted to chime in right there.
Well, I paused it when he's having the conversation and they're going through the bullet explanation right very early in the movie.
Oh, yeah, with the scientist and she's showing him how to pick it up backwards.
Old Fleur, yeah. She...
Uh-huh.
yeah.
When... I paused it when he says, so where does that leave free will? Because it happens 13 minutes into the movie. It's like, hey, right, this is what our movie's about. I don't know. When he's cooking on all cylinders, he makes you feel that instead of just telling you that. Mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, that's a good point.
It's the classic Futurama. This play is bad. It should make me feel things, not tell me how it feels. That makes me feel angry.
Exactly. Yes, that's really good. In fact, I found it really disappointing that it wasn't saying much about life. I know they say the free will line, but the movie does not feel like it's about that at all.
It just feels like as close to like a 007 kind of just espionage thing as I've seen him do, which is, I mean, that's fun. Directors are allowed to have fun if they want to have fun. It's just he set the bar very high for himself, and I didn't care about anything that was happening the whole time. I mean, Donovan, you kept talking about set pieces. Like, obviously, he can just direct the hell out of a set piece, but it felt more like, it teetered more on like a, like just an action movie, move me from one set piece to another than anything that I've ever seen him do, especially considering how much talking there was. I mean, I didn't care about any of these characters. I didn't understand why anything was happening. It just wasn't good.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned that it was a James Bond movie. To me, I thought of it as a superhero movie in disguise.
I thought it was James Bond too. With Kenneth Branagh got a chance to be the Bond villain, which I thought was fun.
I mean, Nolan's work can be the superhero movie in disguise. The reason why I thought of that is there was the nine pieces, and if you put them together, yeah, I mean that's straight up out of Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
But you know, you're right, Adam. When Nolan's work can be the superhero movie in disguise, but other times, let's take Interstellar. He can present spectacle, but with meaningful text simultaneously.
Yeah, I mean, Interstellar is unbelievably good and moving and human, and they don't have to explain everything all the time. It's just, you know, I mean, there's some devastating moments in that where the set pieces are beautiful and then or horrifying, and then you come back and something pretty profound has happened. And again, it's like bands that you expect to be profound all the time. Like, let them have fun and just be goofy at times. But I don't know. It's just like I'm going to play with time. Time is the final frontier. It's just real goofy to me. It didn't work.
It's sad that confusion and plot wackiness hurt its stakes. You're right. I didn't care about any of these people. I did end up enjoying the movie, but I mean, how can you care about somebody if you're absolutely unsure of what they're talking about, which was the first hour and 15 minutes. I'm still complaining about it, although, again, I enjoyed the last hour and 15 minutes. Like, loved it.
I kind of dug it. It reminded me a lot of, like, Grant Morrison's The Invisibles, where it's just, like, you know, the terror of it is there's this absolutely outside force that you're competing against, and you just do your best, right? Like, how do you go with it? Isn't time pretty scary when you think about it?
It is, but I mean, this show is talking about another show that's handling time in a fun way, in an interesting way, Loki. And I've seen, when Tenet ended, I looked at Natalie and I said, we've seen so many Doctor Who episodes that did what that just tried to do much better, much better. Like, especially when they're playing with, like, Pattinson walks away and says, if this is the first time you've met me, then enjoy our beautiful friendship. I guess this is goodbye, whatever he says. You know, it's like, oh, this is Doctor Who has lived, made a living in this territory for years and years and years. And this, it made me care.
It done much better on Doctor Who, but you're not going to get those insane backwards car driving set pieces on Doctor Who.
No, of course not. But
those were so mind-blowing.
I loved it. The bit where, you know, the window's broken. The side view mirror's broken, and you're like, okay, this is setting it up. Absolutely loved the final set piece with the two different teams going, you know, so
the reverse Halo battle.
I just thought it was really weird and cool and interesting, and I loved it.
I'll say this, I can find it a very ironic and fitting for this movie, which is about inversion and two things happening at once. that Nolan, this is Nolan's worst film in a while, but it's the one that solidifies him as a hardworking and brilliant filmmaker. I mean, who else makes such beautiful and dizzying scenes that you really want to see on the big screen?
I like this one better than The Prestige.
Well, I said in a while. It's the worst one he's made in a while.
This was definitely a big screen movie.
I almost forget that he made that The Prestige was his.
It's good. I just think it kind of. Roger Ebert has in his review, he's like, well, it's kind of a cheat, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly the way I feel after watching it. It's a cheat. Mm. The Prestige, not this one. This right. one, I'm not going to spend any time figuring it out because I prefer to just more experience it.
And if you guys are younger than I am, if you can't, will you indulge me and let me just be 45 years old, 100% right now?
Let it fly.
For a movie that's so reliant on key conversations, why? What's up with the sound editing choices? I couldn't hear them.
This was a big point.
That's why it's part of the experience. This is a big point. No one cares. But I watched it with subtitles on, too.
Okay.
Did you?
That's it.
Yeah, I had my fan on. It was pretty hot last night, so.
Yeah.
Okay, Adam, when you said that's a key point, you think he did that on purpose?
It's been a key point of criticism all over the internet, people complaining about it. But yeah, I do think he did it on purpose.
He did do it on purpose. He said he mixed the dialogue under the music and the other sound. There's a word that I can't quite think of.
What's the purpose there? Why would he do that? To make you lean in and try to listen?
I think it's to make you be like, it kind of, like, just go for the ride, man. Like, it doesn't matter.
I got you. Over and over, this movie reminded me of Nolan's work on those last two Batman movies, mm-hmm. specifically. That opening scene was very much a Batman movie.
Heavy Batman vibes.
Totally, totally, totally.
Which was fine. It reminded me how much I liked those first two movies, and the third one a little bit. That's not great when, like, it's reminding me, oh yeah, this guy can do this and it's really great, instead of just enjoying the film that I'm in.
Hmm.
I don't know. I'll stop.
We live bitching. In a twilight world.
No, that's what we're here for. It's fascinating. So I think once again we're kind of on different levels. Adam disliked it. I kind of sort of liked it, and then Donovan liked it.
I liked it as a, I don't know, I just like the sort of, like, I think I know I'm misusing this word, but it's the feeling I get about it, like the Gnosticism of it, I was really working on that vibe. I really like Rob Pattinson. He's a gem. He needs kisses.
He will be your next Batman to tie this all together.
You know, he's if anyone can do it, it might be him. He's a big old weirdo. But and then just some of the stuff was just really, really fun and cool. So whatever, it was 2.5 hours of sci-fi silliness.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those movies that'll make probably pretty good sense the second, third, fourth time, but who wants to watch it the second, third,
zero chance.
I don't think I care about it making sense so much as just, like, I mean, because, like, every science fiction movie is silly at some point, you know, unless you're, like, I don't know, like, they may, has anyone ever seen From the Earth to the Moon? Because it's, I think that's what it's called. It was, like, real physics and mechanics and very much accurate. Nobody watches it because it's super boring. So.
Yeah, that's the way I felt reading The Martian.
I mean, maybe my point is, or my beef is, if his name wasn't on it, then I would be like, this was fun. But I don't know. Maybe that's what I'm wrestling with here in real time, is that I had higher expectations and didn't expect just a goofy sci-fi movie from him. Because, I mean, we've seen him do this over and over again with Inception and Interstellar, and this just did not live up to it. But hey.
You're right. It lacked the humanity.
It feels like he's got a, like, a big picture concept that he's really interested in. It was something with time. And I was kind of vibing on his wavelength. I actually thought, like, it was kind of terrifying to, like, be fighting the future and have no idea. And of course, like, you can figure out why the future wants to fight us. Obviously, we ruined everything for them. So of course, you know, like, it was kind of wild, kind of scary.
Yeah, that part was pretty interesting. I'll give you that.
Very much Grant Morrison and the Invisibles feel to it, which is a pretty trippy comic to check out.
Good deal. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll jump back on the other side. We'll talk briefly about Loki. We'll take a very brief break just to remind you of a few things. First, This Song Sucks, one of Alabama Takes Family, a podcast, just aired their bonus episode last Thursday. It's in your podcast feed if you're a subscriber. And nope, that's not an Apple or Stitcher or whatever error. That is, they've got a bonus episode for season one. There's one more episode to come, too, in July from season one's wrap-up episodes. Then This Song Sucks will begin its second season in the late summer, very early fall. So subscribe and you'll see those episodes appear in your feed. This Friday on our YouTube talk show, Short Takes, we had Jamie Barrier of the Pine Hill Haints on the show. And Jamie was a fascinating guy to talk to. He's a very deep and interesting guy. Check out that conversation if you haven't already. This coming Friday on Short Takes, the band Wanda, the front woman of the band Wanda out of Huntsville, Alabama, who just so happens to be named Wanda herself, will be the guest this week. I say it a lot, but she's really fun and funny, and I had a great day doing that interview with her. So that'll be coming up on Friday bright and early. There's always writing and other things on the Alabama Take itself. You can find it all gathered there in one place. You can listen to This Song Sucks and Taking It Down and watch Short Takes all in one spot with the alabamatake.com. Let's get into the third episode of Loki from this past Wednesday. So we've got Natalie in the chair. She has replaced Adam, and she's going to help us dissect and talk about the third episode of the MCU / Disney Plus show Loki that aired Wednesday. It was called Lamentous. If you haven't seen it yet, stop this podcast because we're going to talk just spoilers immediately. We just dive right in. Okay. So the plot line was simple enough. Loki followed Lady Loki into the portal, and they both end up on a planet called Lamentous, which is about to be destroyed by a moon collapsing on it, and it's going to leave no survivors. They're simply trying to get off the planet before that all happens. The TVA do not know where they are because they aren't making enough of a blip on any kind of timeline since they're in an apocalyptic scenario, and they can't escape it with their usual ease because their stolen TVA device, Tempad, to create portals has been emptied of a charge. It needs recharging, and they can't find anything to charge it that's going to be strong enough. That's it. That was the setup. It requires no long explanation.
I'm having a little bit of trouble because Adam is finally watching Loki, so we had to start over. So I've now watched episode 1 3 times, episode 2 2 times, but only once for episode 3. So I'm trying to remember what all happened. We got a very important conversation. I feel like Sylvie lets us in on some really important information, and it really passes by quickly, so that was pretty fun. How are they going to get off the planet? Is Heimdall going to come to their rescue? Because who knows when in time we are. Maybe he's still around.
If we're in 2077, right?
Well, we don't know when all the Ragnarok
but we don't know where he is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What is time anymore?
Exactly. It's pretty exciting stuff here.
I don't think anyone's going to complain about these two beautiful variations of Loki, assuming they are both Loki. Sylvie and Loki, no one's going to complain about them just talking to one another, which is a lot of this episode. I saw some complaints online that they thought of it as filler, but I wouldn't have thought of it as filler, or it was much more character development oriented, and I thought it was a good episode overall.
I thought it was pretty good. I could see the complaints that it's filler, like, we're moving the plot forward, we're doing things, oops, we're gonna sidestep all that and go for a, you know, set our characters back from their goals a little bit. But, and maybe as the series goes on, it'll feel like filler. I had a good time. I really like that this show is leaning into, like, Loki is just, like, the world's most dangerous clown. Mm. Like, he just can't, like, he just screws everything up, and he can't help himself. But at the same time, they'll remind you that, like, oh, well, no, wait, he's actually super dangerous. Like, the I don't know. I felt like the fight scenes have been very well directed in this, and the kind of episode overall pretty well directed.
It sure beats our Most Dangerous Clown previous, which was Donald Trump.
I thought you were going to say the Joker. With the Jared Leto Joker, to be very clear.
Jesus, I try not to think about that.
That's because it's so dangerous.
With the name Sylvie, she's probably supposed to be the Enchantress or some version of the Enchantress, and she talks about enchanting, so it's like, it's straight up the Enchantress at this point, right, Natalie?
It definitely seems like even if they are going to go with she's still a version of a Loki, they're just going to give her all the powers of Enchantress. I think they're just combining the two, because I think in some of the previews for next week that were shown, you know, we're going to see her as a little girl, and she's definitely wearing the Loki garb, which doesn't, the Enchantress outfit is very similar to Loki. It's the same color, so who knows, but I do think they'll probably just combine the two characters.
You got thoughts on the actress Sophia Di Martino?
I think she's doing a great job.
I'd never heard of her or seen her.
I hadn't either.
Yeah, I do think it's, I heard it said, I think it was the Watch podcast, said that they were happy that they chose someone who's not a known actor for this role, and let her maybe even run with it in the future.
Yeah, well, they probably just can't afford to get another known actor at this point. They've got everybody else. So.
Can't afford? Literally, well, I think it's, else. Yeah, that's the probably, it's not can't afford, they just have everyone.
Maybe that's it.
That's probably it.
Scooped them all up. When are we getting Jason Schwartzman in the MCU?
Oh, he's in. He's going to be in the new Black Widow.
Oh, I was hoping he was going to play Enchantress.
I don't know. Lots of talk in this one. Lots of learning about their characters. Something that would have never flown in the movies. And you guys were fine with the conversations between Loki and Sylvie. We've confirmed that. But Donovan, you mentioned something off mic about someone being missed, right?
Oh, I mean, there was no Owen Wilson in this one.
There was no Owen Wilson. We missed him.
But part of me, yeah, but, and then, you know, we alluded to it earlier, like Sylvie dropping some important information, like, oh, everybody else at the TVA is a variant. Does this mean that he has been on a jet ski?
I think he was a jet ski salesman at some point.
I think he probably was.
Wouldn't that be great? Oh, man, Natalie, that's good. If he was just a jet ski salesman. Car salesmen are bad enough. What's a jet ski salesman like?
I mean, he's definitely like what they've dated him because of the soda that he drinks that was only around like in the early 90s or something.
Yes.
Like he was definitely a jet ski salesman. No question.
He's able to like talk about like in the early 90s, like form and function comes together.
Yes.
What's it going to take to 90s. Get you on this jet ski? What's it going to take you on the lake, man?
Okay. I just want to, you know, like I'm sitting on my jet ski and he's like, oh, wow. You look like you're meant to be there.
Yeah, so the TVA workers are just variants themselves. I do like that. That was a good little twist. So somewhere Owen Wilson's out there riding jet skis while his variant tracks down the likes of Loki. So
it is a good little twist. And it kind of, you know, is like, oh, maybe these timekeepers aren't such nice guys after all.
But they're probably the really sad, like, you know, in the first episode when they're talking about, you know, you were either like this danger variant or you were just late to work one day. These are all probably just like the poor saps who were late to work one day and their lives are ruined.
Like, what did Owen Wilson do? Like, he sold the jet ski to the wrong guy and it's like, well, you screwed up the timeline.
No, he just spent too much time on the jet ski one day and didn't get back before his lunch break was over.
I had a few too many drinks on the weekend on the jet ski.
That's what it was. Next thing you know, wow, I'm
Donovan, what's your variant look like?
Oh God. I hope it's as hot as Loki's.
Natalie, what's your variant doing? What does she look like? He or she look like?
As many times as I've been told in my life that I'm just like the scary, intimidating person. Like, hopefully the variant is either more of that or the total opposite. Like, I want, like, cheerful, just everybody loves to work with this person, very accommodating, team player variant. That's what's happening.
I like it.
I think some of the complaints online were a little justified when you find out that there are only going to be 6 episodes of this show. They wanted more plot because of that, but this was a fun ride. I think the only complaint I honestly have about this episode is it was oddly cheap, wouldn't be the word, but the when they were on the planet, it was very green screen-esque, which is unlike MCU. Usually the line between actor and green screen's a little bit more convoluted than what we saw here. So cheap wouldn't be the word, because it doesn't look cheap. It just looks very fake, very CGI. That was kind of disappointing, but...
It's so expensive to actually crash a planet into a moon or whatever.
I know. You can't get that. You can't get that on the on a bottom
That's
dollar.
That's like Kurosawa did it for that one movie, but it's like he spent all his budget on it.
Any final thoughts as we wrap our short conversation on this week's Loki?
I hope Loki ends up falling in love with Loki, you know?
God.
Oh, come on. My
fear is that the whole reason Sylvie, because we don't quite know why Sylvie wants to destroy the timekeeper or the timelines or whatever. Don't quite know. I mean, maybe we do, but I'm terrified that one of the reasons is going to be that she has like some love interest and it's going to end up being Mobius, and I will be pissed AF if that's the case.
That would be quite a twist, yeah.
Because yeah, Mobius only has one love, the sea.
That's right. All right, well, that's it for this week. We appreciate everyone joining us. We sincerely do. Don't forget to check out This Song Sucks as they air the last of their bonus episodes next month, and they've got the one from last week in your podcast feed. Same can be said about Short Takes. We've got several episodes for you to watch at this point, and one coming up with the soon-to-be legendary band Wanda. As for Taking It Down, we'll be back at it next Tuesday morning. It'll be bright and early. Leave us a review and a ranking and all that online. Put us some stars on that. Help us defeat the algorithm. Not the one in Tenet, but the algorithm in your phone. Thank you all. Talk to you later.